All right. Well, it is truly a blessing to have the opportunity to preach this morning. I don't really want to look at this. I'm going to move it in case I get rowdy. But that's probably not going to happen because usually I get to preach when the other pastors are gone. And they're here today, so it's like, what are we going to do now? All right. So this will be fun. But last week, a beautiful concept, right? And a principle for us as we consider loving God. It's not a if we should, it's a how we should. I mean, it's a when we should. It's a we have to love God, right? But loving others is the same thing. I don't know where you are all at in your Proverbs study. We're in Proverbs, and this morning it talked about promises and principles. And the principle of loving others is in the Bible. And we are called and required to do it. And that's not always easy to do. I'm going to read a quick passage out of 1 John 4. This is free. For you, and but it says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. In this, the love of God was made manifest among us, that God sent His only Son into the world, so that we might live through Him." What a thought. How can we love one another? It's only by the Lord, right? The love that God has allowed us to have that we can love one another. This passage was read last week with the idea of one of the scribes, right, came up and heard them disputing. And then what is this? It's which one is the greatest commandment? And Jesus answered and said, the most important is, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is, the Lord is one. And you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is like unto it," right? Or the second is, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." It's interesting that as yourself, right? Because it's pretty easy for us to love ourselves. As you can tell, I don't miss very many meals. Why is that? Because I love myself, right? When I'm hungry, I scavenge the kitchen to find something good to eat. If it's not there, I go to Quick Trip. No, I'm just kidding. That's not a commercial for Quick Trip. But good coffee. Nonetheless, we're going to go to Luke chapter 6. I'm not going to read the whole passage. We're actually going to go Luke 6, and we're going to highlight a few things. We're going to see actually God's principles to us about loving others, and then we're actually going to get to see within that same passage some of His teaching. So we see His teaching, His principles, right? And we see some of what He does as well. So we're going to get to see a little bit of a combo platter from the Lord this morning as we consider Luke chapter 6. And we're going to be in verses 12 through 45. You say, wait a minute, that's a lot of verses. Yeah. And there's no part two. We're getting it all done today. So, just so you know. But the first thing you see here is Jesus praying. So Luke opens up this little section. So this is just in the context, the flow of the Gospels, where we see Jesus coming into place. Luke chapter 2, right? We're familiar with Luke and the context of Luke. So Luke, we see the birth of Jesus and so on, and then His earthly ministry begins, and He's doing some healings, and He's doing some teaching, and then He's going to choose His 12. So in just a second, we're going to flip the next screen, and we're going to see Him choosing His 12 apostles. But before He does that, Luke puts in here this verse. It says, "In these days, He went out to the mountain to pray." And all night he continued in prayer to God. If I could just kind of highlight a few thoughts and concepts as we go through these verses. But loving other people is very difficult to do if you don't pray for them. It's really, really easy to be offended by a person and go home or find a friend group and talk about that problem, that situation that you had. It's super easy to do that. What's really not easy to do is to pray genuinely and earnestly for that individual in whatever that context might be. It's very difficult to speak negatively and to have a poor attitude towards a person if you are genuinely bringing them before the Lord with a desire to love them. Then some of those hurts and some of those feelings, it doesn't mean they go away. By no means do they go away. But our heart of love for other people is directly connected with our love for God. Why? Because God is love. And through Him and by Him is the only means that we can love other people. So the best way that we can love others is to pray for them. Now we see him choose his apostles. It says, then one day, and now he gives the abbreviated version. Luke cuts to the chase. So we're thankful for Luke getting to the point. And when day came, he called his disciples and chose from them 12, whom he named apostles. Simon, whom he named Peter, Andrew, his brother, and James and John, and Philip, and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, and Simon, who was called the Zealot, and Judas, the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. So we see this chunk of 12 people. How many of us know a lot about those 12 people that are named right now? We don't know a lot, right? We can know a lot, but sometimes just maybe right off the cuff, we don't know exactly who these people are. But as Jesus prayed for them, and then he chose them, specifically for what and who they were. Imagine that list. You have a zealot. And there's, different thoughts towards those things. But, a guy who might have been a part of a small group of people who raised issues around town. And then you have a guy, potentially, and then you have a guy named Judas Iscariot. Now, there's also some, depending on who you read, there's a couple of concepts with that Iscariot. It could be where he's located, where he came from, which was not Galilee. So he's already a little bit of an outsider. Or it could be that's a negative context. And so you have a bad dude, you might say, if we're looking from the outside, a part of his group, his intimate group. And then Jesus knew by that last phrase there who became a traitor. So this is some pretty significant actions that we see Jesus. So we'll see some teaching on it in a second, but his actions are pretty amazing. He chose his intimate 12 that he worked with and through for his earthly ministry, and he was entrusting in them everything that they needed to know before he were to go off the scene. And a part of that group are people who were rough around the edges. You had fishermen. You had a guy by the last name Iscariot. Like I said, it could mean that he just came from Kiriath, a town in southern Judah. It could mean that he was falsehood. So Judas the false one. How many of us like being friends with people who, speak our name, the things that we say wrongly to other people? And then you catch wind of it and you're like, wait a minute, I never said that. How do you love people like that? This interesting group that Jesus chose. It kind of brings us even to this concept that Paul wrote here in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 through 29. For consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many of you were powerful. Not many of you were noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God. So one thing that I would like to highlight, and I feel like we've been highlighting a lot and part of our family dynamic, which I won't get into this morning, but we recognize that every single person has a story. You could look around this room right now and you can imagine, maybe you want to do this. Maybe you want to be like, well, they drive a fancy car, so I know what's going on there. Or, well, they, have a nice mustache, so they have the power of the stash. You can look around the room and you can make your assumptions about people. And you can then treat them in that context. Well, they said hi to me. Well, they didn't say hi to me. Well, they looked at me weird. Well, that might just be their face. So you need to get over that. But we bring into this context, right? This, how do people treat us? Well, every single person has a story. Every single person in this room has a past, and you don't know what that is. When I think of that to some level, just outside of my family, I remember one time going to Burger King and I watched this dude who went through the drive-thru, came in the door screaming mad that they messed up his burger. I said, put whatever on it, you put this on it, and slams it down on the counter and just starts reaming out the cashier. I think our family was ordering or we were next in line or something, and you're kind of standing there at the counter looking at this dude just freaking out on this lady who had nothing to do with the drive-thru. And so I was just like, hey pal, let's simmer down a bit. Which, how that works, right? When you tell your wife, why don't you just calm down? It's the best way to end an argument. But you're just like, what are you doing? This lady had nothing to do with it. And she just stood there. And then she took the sandwich and she walked away and she brought a new sandwich back and handed it to him. Didn't say a thing. But she thanked me for sticking up for her. And then I did everything I could verbally to affirm her position and thankful for her. Now, yeah, whatever. She made me a burger from Burger King, so we could debate that. But nonetheless, I wanted to be nice, right? I wanted to be nice. Because do I know what her story is? I don't. When you think of all these people, but God did. That's what God purposefully chose these people to be with Him. He knew them and their imperfections and that He was a traitor. And He loved Him and He poured into Him and He gave Him every bit of knowledge and He entrusted Him with tasks within His group. Let's digress a couple times as we go along here, but how many would you do that? I don't trust you. So here, why don't you handle the cash? I don't trust you. So how about you go minister to Grandma so-and-so? I don't trust you. So why don't you go do that ministry? And I'm not saying Jesus did anything flippant. Obviously, there was people in place and they went out multiple people together and so on and so forth. So I'm not trying to build a case where Jesus just go do whatever you want in my name. That obviously wasn't the case. But He knew these people and He knew their past and He knew exactly what was going to come of it. and He chose them and He loved them and He cared for them and He taught them intimately truth about His life, truth about His death, and truth about heaven. What an amazing thing. And He entrusted them to go forward with that. So a couple of those guys, right? Peter, James, and John, oftentimes put together, we could sing the song about the boat and the fish filled up. But we won't. But Peter, he was a bold guy. Kind of a run your mouth kind of guy. And Jesus, you know, be like, why don't you go stand in the back? No, Jesus was in the front with a little dagger cutting people's ears off. Because he's like, I'm in this thing with you. That's the kind of guy we're talking about. But they were fishermen. They were not looked at as noble class, born into some, uppity, high scale, guy. These were people who needed God's love, and God knew that. The next little section here is that he ministered to the multitude. Okay, so now we see him pick this smaller group that he was going to really dig into and minister with and get into their lives and really just we see that example of what he did here, and then he goes to this bigger group. So he walks down the hill. Now there's some concepts. Was this a mini version of Matthew's Beatitudes? Was this a different scenario? And I don't know that we have to worry about that exact moment, but this is like a little bit of abbreviated chunk, and we'll get to that in a second. But he goes to the crowd, and who was the crowd? Well, when he came down after he prayed, after he chose the 12, and he stood on a level place. So this doesn't mean he came off the mountain per se, but it meant that he came down to a level place. Maybe just, back where more crowd could be. When you're up in the mountains, there's not a lot of crowd. When we went on a mission trip to Germany, we got to go hiking in the Alps of Austria. And you go up single file once you get going towards the top. Now, we didn't go to the top of a mountain or anything, but just up the ways we went, you're going single file. There's not like big places for crowds to hang out. So he came back down where there was a more level spot, where the great crowd was, and his disciples, and a great multitude of people from all of Judah and Jerusalem and the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, who came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. And those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured, and all the crowd sought to touch him, for power came from him and healed them all. So now, just a reminder here, when we talk about disciples, we're talking about just simply followers, people who followed him, followed the crowd. They were the crowd, the crowd. Now this crowd could be a couple of things. That I thought I had written down. Hold on. Not there. Any crowd? No crowd. Okay. So there's it's interesting a little bit about this crowd. Because it literally was just the people who were coming to try to get help. Okay, so now you know these kind of people. So first you have the intimate people, the people who you're entrusting, you're building it up. The idea of who's going to take over when we leave, kind of a concept. So he's really pouring into them. But then you have the other ones. They're just like the leeches. They're like hanging on the outsides, trying to, get anything that they can out of the deal. They're following the crowd. They're looking for the big flashy show. They've come, filing in. They're looking to speak with Jesus, but mostly not because of who he is as God, but they're looking for what he can do for them. And so God then there starts to speak and teach. And so you have the crowd, and they're looking to come get healed. And then we have these beatitudes, or these blessings and woes, verses 20 through 26. And so he starts to teach. He says, "And he lifted up his eyes on the disciples and said, 'Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you shall be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you shall laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you and when they exclude you and revile you and spurn you and your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven, for so their fathers did to the prophets.'" So he gives that little chunk of blesseds. Blessed are the poor, the hungry, the weeping, the disrespected. So he's not saying that the only way you're blessed is if you're poor. He's not saying you're only blessed if you're always hungry. Now that's not what he is trying to get across, but what he's trying to get across is there is daily living that takes place, and sometimes it's uncomfortable. If we look at it in the context of this loving others, and he chose his 12, and then he has the big multitude, and he's preaching to the multitude, and he's trying to help encourage them because they're looking for something. And he's trying to give them truth and help them to understand that I know all of you have a story. I know some of you are hurting. There's issues, maybe financially. Maybe there's problems because of food, or there's a need because of a weeping. And there could even be the idea that people are hurting your name, or just talking bad about you behind your back. And the Bible, and he's trying to help them to understand that there's a bigger picture here. But don't let that get in the way of loving others. And then he pronounces these woes. The only place to do that. Now, interesting, if I look real quick, it says, "Leap for joy." In verse 23, it says, "Rejoice in that day and leap for joy." From my understanding, the only other time that phrase and or that kind of verbiage is used is when John the Baptist leaped inside when Mary came to visit her cousin. Interesting. Anyways, leap for joy, for your reward is great in heaven, for your fathers did to the prophets. There's a bigger picture. And then there's some woes. "But woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe to you who are full, for you shall be hungry. Woe to you who laugh, for you shall mourn and weep. Woe to you when all the people speak well of you, for so their fathers did to the false prophets." So now this is twisting it a bit. Jesus is saying, okay, let's teach about love. What's hindering you from loving other people? What's keeping you from the biblical requirement to love the person next to you? What's keeping you from that? I know a lot of people who say this. I think of one name. I'm not going to say it, but he would tell me all the time, "I'm just looking to get myself in a good position so that I can really just give to people." Oh, all right. What does that mean? You got to have your bank account thick, your retirement taken care of, and all the things are well and established, and then you can start helping other people. Oh, okay. So what was hindering him? Well, it's kind of labeled there. Woe to the rich, or woe to the poor, or blessed be the poor. I mean, you name it, right? What's keeping him from loving? What's keeping you from loving someone else? I'll take this moment to just once again express my gratitude for those of you who were willing to set aside some time to come help us on our house and made all of that possible. It would have not been possible if it were not for some of your help. And I am eternally thankful. I don't know how that works because I don't know how thankful I'll be in heaven. I'm assuming I will be. And I will tell everybody about it. So that's why I say it that way. But that just was unreal. Because you all have specific and individual talents that you use and that you can use to show love to other people. And you give them out. And so what would hold you back? Well, you know, I'm busy. Okay. Schedule. It's tough. I hear you. Money. Yeah, I know. You can't give what you don't have. I understand that. But what's keeping us from loving others? As I mentioned at the beginning, we can always be in prayer. We can always send an encouragement to another person. I had the privilege of standing, had a fellow over for a brief time. He was standing in my kitchen and he says, "Hold on." He took a phone call and here it was somebody else. So it was somebody from here calling somebody from here and just saying, "Hey brother, you need anything? How you doing?" And he got off the phone, he hung up, he says, "Huh, that was nice. He just called to see how I was doing." And I didn't ask for permission from people, so I can't name names. But I mean, that's what we're talking about. What's keeping you from loving others? What's keeping you from loving others? There's a divine love. Jesus shows us this. That it shouldn't be dependent on current circumstances. But what's so amazing is it's full of hope. If you were to look at Psalm 1, the first little section there in Psalm chapter 1, it says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law does he meditate day and night. Like a tree planted by the streams of water that yields fruit in its season." And it goes on. But there is a hope. The love that Jesus shows to us is a hopeful love. It's a love because of what he has done for us. If we keep moving on, it tells us then now that we've got to love our enemies. So now it's like, okay, wait a minute. We've got to love despite our circumstances, and love shouldn't be dependent on our circumstances. Now it's telling me to love my enemies. Love my enemies. "But I say to you who hear, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. Do to one who strikes you on the cheek." Literally means jaw. Like, go ahead and just let them break your jaw. "Offer the other side. And from one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either." So in other words, there's a jacket involved. And then you have a shirt on underneath it. So if he wants a jacket, give him your shirt too. "Give everyone who begs from you, and from one who takes away from your goods, do not demand them back. And as you wish that others would, do to you, do so to them. If you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is it to you? Even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. Loving your enemies. When we were working on our house, we had the privilege of having a large portion of the tools stolen out of it. Yay for us. And so we didn't have a major pity party, but we did try to call the police and, you know, file the claim and see if there was any hope of getting it back. Never heard anything about it. So obviously they needed it way more than we did. And so that was there. But the Lord in His good providence had allowed there to be some money given. And so we could get some of the tools back to be able to finish working on the project and make sure everybody had some of the things that they had. So what am I supposed to do about that? Right? What are you supposed to do about that? What are we supposed to do about that? People do things to us. And He tries to tell you, He says, well, here's the deal. If you only love people who are lovely, what good is that? If you only do good to people who do good back, what good is that? If you only lend to people who you know for sure will give you it back or pay for it, then don't lend it. I grew up listening to a missionary come from Brazil, and he had some tools coming from America, so he brought them all down there, and he'd have some of his people in his church who were pretty poor ask him to borrow things. And he said, well, here's the deal. You can come to my house and we'll use it together. He said, because he didn't want them to take it to their house because he wasn't sure if he was ever going to get it back. So it was twofold. He didn't lose it. He could keep ministering with it. And then he'd have them in their house and then they could work together with it. I think that's a pretty good concept, right? It doesn't mean that he wasn't willing per se to let anybody use the stuff, but he got to use it as a ministry tool. He got to use it in such a way that says, come to my house, let's work together with it, depending on what it was, right? And we can minister with it. I think that's a pretty big deal. I think that's a pretty good thing, a pretty good way to do things. So love your enemies. That's a challenge. That's a challenge. That's a challenge when we know them. Sometimes we feel a little bit better about getting ticked off at people when they cut us off in the car because we don't know them. You know. But we're to love our enemies. It's a human love. Love those who love you. Do good to those who do good to you. Give to those who give in return. That's what we do from a fleshly perspective. We say, yep, I can do that. There's not a lot of wager there. There's not a lot of if. It's just kind of like, okay, I can do that. It's a human love. But we need to have the divine love that was talked about a moment ago. Real quickly, as we move through, though, we see this, judging others. So this is the idea of the great expectations. So we have, what's the problem that we face a lot of times when we cast judgment? Well, we believe that we're owed something. And if somebody infringes on our rights, well, that's a problem. The Bible tells us here to judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, and will be put into your lap. For with the measure you see it, with the measure you use it will be measured back to you. Excuse me. He also told them a parable. So here's his illustration now. So don't judge others. And many times this judgment comes because we feel like we should be treated special. We should be able to hold ourselves to a special standard. So why can't I love you? You're different than me. Why can't I love you? You don't speak the same language as I do. You don't come from the same background. Why should I love you? Well, you don't, and the list could go on. And we get this concept that says, I am in a different place than you. We don't have the same kind of connection. And so therefore, you don't matter to me. So he gives a couple of illustrations. So a couple of illustrations are the idea of having a beam. So it says in verse 39, he also told them a parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? They will both fall into the ditch or into a pit. A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like the teacher. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but you do not notice the log that is coming out of your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take out the speck that is in your eye," when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your own eye. So the concept of special treatment. What do you believe you are owed, that if you had it, or if people were the same as you, then you could love them? The last little portion here as we wrap this up is a tree and its fruit. For no good tree bears bad fruit. Nor again does a bad tree bear bad fruit. For each tree is known by its own fruit. For figs are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor the grapes picked from bramble bushes. The good person out of the good treasure of his own heart produces good. The evil person out of the evil treasure produces evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. There's the next phrase. So then we have this concept of being known by our love. If we were to look around the room, you'd probably have the same thing. If you were to say, "Yep, I have a problem. I think I might need help with it. Who am I going to call?" For me, as the administrator of the school, I have a list of people who I call when I have a teacher say I'm sick, or I have to go to this or that or the other thing, and so they're gone. I have that list of people, and I call them because I know them, and they know me, and they fear my call. No, hopefully you don't. But then we have you come in maybe and help in a classroom or whatever the case might be. But I call specific people because they are the ones who have made it known to me that they are willing, and then they've shown it to me by coming in. And so then you have the opportunity to know them, and then we work together, right? We are known by our fruit. There are people here, just like I mentioned a moment ago with the phone call or the working on the house or the visiting after church or the setting up the church or whatever it might be, and the concept of loving other people, you know who's going to work. And so you know who to call sometimes. Because you know that they're always willing. So then that causes us to ask ourselves these questions, right? What's keeping me from loving another person? What's keeping me from growing my bubble, you might say? Growing my sphere of people that I know and can work with. Why? What's keeping me from doing that? Is it my own heart? Is it that I have this concept that when I look at another person, I don't deem them worthy? And we might say that. We might not say that. Those words, right? But I don't deem them worthy to be a part of my group, you might say. Is it just simply that I'm unwilling to help, to do the work, to be engaged? What is it that's keeping me from loving other people? It's a challenge. It is a challenge. And it's a real challenge when you have people say things against you. That makes it even harder to do it. I think it was a misunderstanding. But moving away from Oakland, coming up here, and there was a fella in the church that we had been working with and discipling, and we went back down there over a Christmas break, and I was at my brother-in-law's shop. We fixed the car. He wasn't available at the moment, so we fixed his car for him. And then my brother-in-law says, "Hey, text him, and let him know the car is done." So I text him, said, "Hey, we fixed the car. We're just going to pull it outside, so that we can work on my car, you know, so on and so forth." He's like, "Who is this?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? We've texted a million times. We sat together. We studied the Bible together. What are you talking about? You don't know who this is." And when he came out to the shop to get the car and all that stuff, I'm like, what do you mean you don't have my number? You get rid of my number? He's like, "Couldn't have done it any sooner." Wait, what? Ugh. Well, I think there was a little misunderstanding, because then I talked to another fella a little bit about it, and he thinks that maybe it was that he got a new phone, and so on and so forth. But originally, the words, and I'm going to go with that. I'm hoping for that, right? But if it wasn't, you're like, "Oh, that hurts," you know. I literally have him come up on my phone as a reminder every Friday at noon to pray for him. And then I text him, and he's like, "I don't even know, why would I have your number again?" I'm like, so I'm going with the misunderstanding. But wow, right? What if that was your story? That's tough. That's hard. Because we want to love other people, but sometimes they don't receive it. Sometimes they don't want it. Sometimes they actually do things back to you that hurt. But God wants us to keep going. Keep loving. Keep opening ourselves up to Him. And allow us to do what He calls us to do. To love other people.